Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading a story called People in My Town Started to Disappear. We called it The Slow Rapture by Micah Cooper. I hope you enjoy this story, and if you do, let me know down below in the comments wherever you can. Appreciate you for listening. Let's get started. It started with Eddie Martin. One second he was at Garvey's General, shooting the crap with the cashier. The next, he was gone. A whip, crack-like noise signaled his departure, air rushing into a space that was previously occupied by a man. The glass bottle of cherry soda he was holding fell to the floor and smashed. The cashier looked dumbfounded. He ran through the store, seeing if anyone else was around to confirm what he had just witnessed. We all called him crazy at first. People don't just vanish into thin air. It wasn't until Garvey pulled up the CCTV records that we started to believe it. One frame, there, the next, gone. Drink all over the floor. Most still thought it was fake, some dumb joke the three men were in on. Lots of stuff could be done with computers nowadays. Faking a video was easy. Garvey insisted he had nothing to do with it, though. Whatever this was, it was all Eddie. He was probably just hiding out somewhere, laughing at all of us, Garvey had said. Then a day passed, and then two. Long time to hide for a prank. The third day was when people really started getting worried. An SUV drove through a red light on Main Street, went right through and into a pole. The driver's seat was destroyed, would have probably killed the driver if there had been one. The car, however, was empty. Sheriff Lowry found the registration in the glove compartment. Melissa Gore, a teacher at the elementary school, was the owner and the second person to vanish. The sheriff's department searched the area for about an hour before shrugging their shoulders and towing the car to the impound lot. An hour after that, the mayor was on the radio announcing a town meeting to be held that night. Word spread quickly of both the second disappearance and of the meeting. Whispers spread around town. Eddie could be explained away as a dumb joke. He'd show up eventually, right? It helped that he didn't have anyone to worry about him. He had a couple of friends in town, but that was it. Mostly kept to himself. Melissa was a different story. All the kids she taught, a husband, some family in town, people would be looking for her. People would want to know what happened. The meeting was a crap show, televised live on local channels for the viewing pleasure of those who couldn't make it. The mayor and sheriff walked out to a crowd that was yelling about 50 different theories for what the hell took those people. Attempts to quell the crowd were futile, until Sheriff Lowry cupped his hands to his face and boomed a, "Quiet!" The mayor, Mr. Reeds, was at the microphone now and started. He stammered and sputtered about how our small town didn't have the tools required to investigate these matters fully, and how he was calling in the big guns to help find these people. Half the room erupted into curses and boos when he clarified that said big guns were the United States government. He said he contacted state police at first, and it got escalated surprisingly fast. No one wanted government types poking their nose in our business, but calmer heads recognized the necessary evil. We wanted our folks to be found, after all. A quick thank you goodbye, and Mayor Reeds was off the stage, along with the sheriff. It would be a long time till we would all head back to our homes, however. 20 different conversations erupted. An angry male voice was one of the easier ones to hear. "Why the hell are we letting the government come help?" he said. "They caused all this. Teleportation experiment, gotta be, just like that Philadelphia thing." "Shut up, Jimmy," a different voice retorted. "It's aliens. It gotta be aliens. I saw a UFO the other week when walking my dog. Long, transparent thing with fins." And the two began to fight, calling each other all sorts of things that boiled down to crazy or stupid. In the back, a small group had begun to form around Paul Baker. He worked at the library. Going through historical accounts and folklore was his hobby. "The land's no good," he said, shaking his head. "What the hell's that mean?" a voice from the crowd around him asked. "Bad land. Bad things happen. When the European settlers came, they found this area completely unoccupied. Big, grassy, open area next to the forest with a stream in it. Perfect for a community. Why wasn't it being used? Remember when those kids from Gritham came down that one summer? They were anthropology students. They said it was remarkable how empty that land was. No traces of native cultures at all. No arrowheads. No burial sites. Hell, no pottery shards. The land was empty for a reason. It had to be. His crowd began to murmur at that. Another group was forming on the other side of the room, this one headed by a handful of people. An older woman was talking the most and the loudest. She was Patricia Hornley, a PTA mom who stayed in it long after her daughter had finished school. She had a few other of her PTA members around her, and they were providing their own theory. "Does this not fall in line with the description of the rapture?" she preached. "We assumed we would all get taken at once, but the Lord works in mysterious ways. Mrs. Gore was an angel to her students, and she has been taken up into the kingdom of heaven. I embrace this slow rapture, and I'm happy for those that are taken. I pray my turn comes soon." Her crowd had a lot of the churchgoers in it. They were all nodding with her, clapping in the pauses. I guessed it was comforting to them. I didn't stay long after that. Paul Baker had left that night. He went straight home, packed up, and was out to his car in about 30 minutes. His neighbors asked where he was going to go, what he was going to do. "Up north in Jersey," he replied. "I got family up there. I'll get a job there." And he was gone. Guess he spooked himself with bad land talk. He was leaving lots behind. Mayor Reed's big guns came in the morning. We had gathered near Garvey's General. We had all agreed last night that it would be a good idea to make sure no one vanished overnight. Families and couples sent one member each if they didn't all come. We had just finished confirming that we didn't lose anyone to the slow rapture. It was a good name. I had to give Patricia that. When we heard the roaring of many engines, we watched as big, dark green trucks drove into our small town. There were five of them, all the same bulky SUV. Each had a decal on the driver door, a seal for some kind of government department. It showed a woman with a sword in one hand and a struggling snake in the other. Yellow words circled the seal and read, "Bureau of Interior Management, BIM. The convoy came to a stop at the store. We watched from the parking lot as the door of the middle car swung open. A large man hopped out and in the same swift motion closed the door behind him. He was dressed in a black jumpsuit, covered with pouches and belts. The same seal from the car door was embroidered on the back. He walked up to us, smiling, and asked us where Mayor Reed's might be. Someone pointed him out and the man thanked us. Mayor Reed's, Sheriff Lowry, and the man in the black jumpsuit stepped to the side and started talking. We all tried to listen in, and bits and pieces came through. "Just what the hell is the Bureau of Interior Management?" Mayor Reed's asked. "I thought we'd get the FBI or something." The man in the black jumpsuit, still grinning, put a large hand on the mayor's shoulders and replied. He spoke in a quieter voice than Reed's did. We couldn't hear a thing. He turned to the sheriff and said something. "Listen, pal," Lowry began. "I was under the impression that this was going to be a joint effort. Where I come from, that means work together, not I'm king of the playground, listen to me." The man in the black jumpsuit spoke louder in his reply this time, glancing at us. He was making sure we could hear this part. "Your impression was wrong. As of 5 hours ago, in fact, complete control over this investigation has been passed over to me. Any interference in my investigation, and I will send you all the way to Attica. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Do you understand me?" His eyes wandered to our group at the end. "That goes for all of you too," they said. Lowry stammered, five different words trying to come out while Reeds just looked at the asphalt like a scolded child. "Good." The man in the black jumpsuit practically spun on his heels to face the crowd. "Any motels in this little town?" A man raised his hand. He wore a baseball cap and had a beer gut. "Oh, we got one. I own it. It's just down the road a little ways." "Great. Me and my boys are going to borrow it for a few days while we investigate this little issue your town's got. You don't mind, do you?" The same crap-eating grin was on his face. Well, I don't know. Oh, wait a minute." The large man held up a finger and dug into a pouch around his hip with his other hand. He pulled out an envelope. Reaching in, he produced a wad of bills that looked like they had just gotten out of the mint that day. Not a wrinkle in sight. "This should cover it." He handed the motel owner the wad of bills. He turned again to face his convoy of cars. The man performed a hand motion, reached over to the walkie-talkie on his shoulder, and whispered a few words into it. The convoy began moving towards the direction of the motel. The man in the black jumpsuit walked back over to the sheriff and mayor. "Now," he said, putting an arm on each of their shoulders, "where can I find the car that the nice woman disappeared in?" The BIM guys had become a part of our town for the next few days. We got used to seeing them, walking in pairs, holding machines in their hands they would use to gather reading or something like that. Their uniform was very similar to the large man's. The only difference was that theirs was green. Black jumpsuit, he hadn't given his name, so that we should continue the morning headcount meetings. A man from the bureau would join us there now, and if anyone was missing, he would call it in and they would send men to the scene to check. That's what happened when Mayor Reeds didn't show up to one of the headcounts. The man in the green jumpsuit talked into his shoulder radio when we did the count. Then he was in his car and driving to Mayor Reed's house. The rest of us looked at each other. We followed. What else were we to do? False alarm, one of the men in green was saying as I pulled up. They were packing their gear back into their trucks. He's not gone? I asked. Oh, he's gone, the man replied. Only not like the other two. He skipped town, his car's missing. Wallet, probably too. Reed's was probably smart for that. Smarter than me. I don't know why I stayed. I thought about that on the drive back to my house. Maybe I thought I was special. That whatever happened to Eddie and Melissa wouldn't happen to me. Maybe deep down, I believed Patricia's take. That this was some holy rapture. Taking the good to heaven. I wasn't religious much myself nowadays, but I grew up going to church every week and, well, that stuff sticks in your head. Or maybe it was simpler than that. Maybe it was the same reason everyone else was staying around. Maybe it was just a want. No, a need. A deep, primal need to see this through to the end. To get an answer. I passed the elementary school on the way back. The big sign out front with those remarkable black letters read, "We miss you, Melissa." A corkboard near to it had drawings pinned on it, all of her. Her students must have done them. They all had messages similar to the one on the big sign. There were a few students playing outside on the grass. Recess, I guessed. They were playing some version of tag, screaming and hollering. "The hungry spirit's coming for you," the kid who was it yelled. One by one, gonna get everyone." I shivered a bit. Children could turn anything into games, especially tragedy. Isn't that what Ring Around the Rosie was all about, after all? Life went on. We lost some people as the days went by. Sheriff Lowry was one. A few other townspeople, too. It became hard to tell who was vanishing and who was just leaving town in the middle of the night. The BIM people abandoned their motel base overnight. They now sat on the outskirts of the town with tents at first, then a bigger, prefabricated building they got sent in from God knows where. A few of us went to investigate. The owner of the place was one of the ones who ditched town. Probably did it that day he got that wad of cash from the black jumpsuit man. Peeking in through the windows, we found that every room was what you'd expect. Just motel rooms, if a bit messy. Only one room was different. An olive green bag was on the floor. Black boots still lay by the bed. Equipment was on the table, and looked like one of the BIM guys got raptured. Must have spooked the others. The BIM guy at the next headcount was wearing a full hazmat suit. Guess they thought it would protect them from whatever was going on. Hell, maybe it would. The black jumpsuit man was also there, though he wore a similar white hazmat this time. "Still think it's them doing it, Jimmy?" a man asked. "Government teleportation? Look at them. They're spooked. It ain't them, I'm telling you, it's aliens." There weren't too many of us left now. Mostly it was Patricia's group, the ones who believed those that disappeared were getting taken up to heaven. She was preaching outside now. The town was empty enough that no one really cared. Most others had the sense to leave. Others who stayed were the families of the missing, hoping that the BIM guys might figure something out, might be able to bring them back. A very small handful were fools like me, staying to see this to the end. Black Jumpsuit looked at the crowd and cleared his throat. "We just need a few more days," he announced. "We're close to figuring this all out."
"We know what's going on," screeched Patricia.
A chorus of agreement came from her followers.
"It's beyond you, and it's a good thing. It's a beautiful process."
Black Jumpsuit held his hands up in front of him in defense while still smiling. "Whatever you say, ma'am." He looked at the rest of us. We nodded. A few more days, we'd find out what was going on. Patricia would be the last town member taken. She was outside, preaching again one day when that whip-crack sound came and she was gone. The crowd stood still for a moment and then erupted into cheers. She got what she wanted, what they all wanted. She had been taken up. The BIM people were there quick. They all wore the full white hazmat suits now. They scanned the members of the crowd with their equipment and took their readings. One of the people in the crowd was recording the sermon on their phone. They had captured the whole thing. Before anyone could watch it, though, the phone was taken by one of the BIM people. Her followers decided that they'd have a party in the school auditorium to celebrate her ascension. Food and drinks, movies on the big projector, the whole nine yards. Even us non-believers went. What else was there to do in a town anymore? It sounded like it might be a good time anyway. Tables were set up in the back with bowls of food and drink. The projection screen was lowered and images of Patricia were being slideshowed on it, all with text that said things like congratulations. No one knows who did it. It had to be someone from the BIM, someone who had a crisis of conscience. We'll never know their name, though. Suddenly, the room went dark. There were a few gasps of surprise. Then the projection changed. Instead of the images of Patricia, now it was a white text on a black background that read, "You have been lied to." Then the next slide, "The missing are dead." Some more gasps from the crowd from that. Somewhere a woman said, "Bullshit." Deep down, though, some of us knew, and the next slide would convince everyone. It was the cell phone footage of Patricia's rapture. It played normally at first, preaching, whip crack, gone, but the cell phone had a higher FPS than the old CCTV at Garvey's. The footage played again and slowed down as it got closer to the moment, eventually going frame by frame. "Holy hell!" cried a man when we saw it. A child started to cry. A man whose child got raptured broke down, something deep inside breaking in his cries. Most of us were silent in the revelation. In one frame, Patricia was mid-sentence, mouth open, finger pointing. She was in the same pose in the next frame, and it looked normal until you got to her head. It looked as if a scoop had been taken out of the right side of her face. The layers displayed like a half-sucked jawbreaker. Skin gave way to meat, meat to bone, bone to brain, and brain to nothing. Like something had taken an impossibly smooth bite out of her. And I knew it wasn't possible. It happened to her so fast it couldn't be. But I could have sworn her mouth had changed slightly. I could have sworn it was curling into a scream now. My mind flashed back. Badland, maybe. Hungry spirits, closer. But God, it felt like the air itself was hungry. We all left town after that. No one spoke a word. I passed the BIM base on the drive out. I locked eyes with Black Jumpsuit. For once, he wasn't smiling. I think they wanted guinea pigs. Wanted to see how often the thing needed to eat. See if they could control it. Screw that. I've been out of South Carolina for a while now. I still look, though. I still look at the area. Our little town got taken off the maps recently. Why wouldn't it be? No one lived there anymore. I look at missing people reports, though, and people still go missing around there. Abandoned cars found in the middle of the road or careened off the side. Our town was always a drive-through area. Town's off the map, but roads still get used. I hope it's enough. I hope the thing is satisfied. I hope to God it doesn't spread. And that's the end of the story. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, let me know in the comments below, and maybe consider subscribing if you're on YouTube, or following if you're anywhere else, like on the podcast. If you'd like to support this channel even more, there is a Patreon available. That'd be a hot dog thing to do, eh? Support the channel! You can do whatever you want, let's be real. But I appreciate you if you are a patron for helping make these episodes possible. If you'd like to send me your story, you can at storiesaftermidnight.com. And if you'd like to come hang out with us on Discord, you can do that too. Links to all of these things and more will be in the description below, including merch. Some really cool stuff. Anyways, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed yourself. We'll see you in the next one.